mailing this talk, I'll discuss this recent paper that we're having collaboration with Tamás Vertézi from Debrecen University, and Nicolas Brunet, he's my supervisor in Geneva. So the idea would be to discuss non-classicalities of quantum mechanics. And of course, that's the reason why we like quantum mechanics, because it's different from what we now name classical physics. And I'll try to remark and connect these points. Let's see how it goes. So, well, we can have non-classicality in quantum mechanics in the level of measurements. This was actually one of the first things, this Heisenberg uncertainties that discuss compatibility of measurements. That some measurements, they cannot be performed at the same time. Some measures are not compatible. I'll be more rigorous soon. And of course, we can have non-classicality in the level of quantum states systems. For instance, we have this entanglement, a quantum states that cannot be understood as simple statistical mixture of independent systems. And when we combine both non-classical in the level of states and non-classical in the level of measurements, we can have this non-locality that's a bit more deep, I'll say. It's a deeper form of non-classicality. Usually, we work in a scenario where you have two parties. We can have more, but in this talk, I'll focus only on bipartite situation. But we have one side, let's say Alice, the other side Bob. And for some reason, they cannot communicate. People would like to name that non-signaling. We can imagine, for instance, that they are separated in a space-like situation. So, and in this non-locality, I'll present with more details later, but we work in a scenario where Alice will receive some inputs, some label, and Bob as well, and they will output some answer. Okay, so so these are the three concepts that I've discussed before. So non-locality, entanglement, there's non-classicality in the level of states, and non-classicality in the level of measurements. And we would like to learn how these concepts relate with each other. What can we say about these connections and how close they are? So the first thing that is quite simple is to see is that non-locality implies entanglement. So if you have the situation and two parts that they play a game and then have this non-local correlation, the state is entangled. And that follows trivially from the fact that separable states, if you only have a statistical mixture of independent systems, you can never have this non-locality phenomenon. And another simple thing to note as well is that non-locality implies that we have incompatibility in the level of measurements, that we have something non-classical in the level of measurements. Again, this is easy to note because one can show easily that compatible measurements can never lead to non-locality. And now we can ask as well the converse question. How does entanglement relate to non-locality? How does incompatible measurements relate to non-locality? Especially this connection here, entanglement and non-locality, I believe it's fair to say that it's almost a research field on its own. Many, many people, they are interested in how we do this bridge. What's the connection between entanglement and locality? And one result, that something that we know, that all pure entangled states, they can lead to non-locality. They are a useful resource to non-locality. They can outperform classical mechanics. And this first appeared in this paper by Nicolas Gisson in 91. And then there were some improvements, but not so far from that. So it's clear that all entangled states, that they are pure, they can lead us. They are useful for non-locality, have a strong connection for the pure states. But nevertheless, in this very famous paper of Werner, 89, he presented this class of states, the Werner states. And these states, they have this funny property that although they are entangled, they have the non-classical taste, they are useless in this standard non-locality scenario. They are not a useful resource. They cannot outperform separable states or even like classical, what the notion we have of classical theories. Again, I'll be more specific later, but the beginning just to give us the taste. And on the other hand, we don't know so much. Like this, I said, in my opinion, it's fair to say that it's a research field on its own, this connection here. But we don't know much about this connection. We know a few, and that's the goal of this paper, to see how can we do this bridge and what can we say. So let's go. First, let's discuss like compatibility of measurements. So what do we mean? The beginning, when we all started with quantum mechanics, probably one of the first things that we read, that we learned, is that quantum mechanics, like measurements on quantum mechanics, they are described by these quantum observables, that they are self-adjoint operators. And we'll check the eigenvalues, they represent the outcome, and we check the eigenvectors. And probably everyone read that once, that they are compatible if and only if they commute. And sometimes, like in quantum mechanics books, it's not so clear what they mean with compatibility, but they will say things like, these two, the measurements that they are described by A and B, these operators, they are compatible, they can be jointly performed, they don't disturb each other. And that's all really nice. But then after a while, we see that, well, we can do a bit more, we can work with some more general measurements, and a very good mathematical formalism for that. It's the notion of POVMs, this set of operators, set of positive operators, they sum to identity. And together with this Born's rule, we can recover the probabilities. And now something that I find quite funny is usually mainly all the books that I know almost, people will discuss compatibility of measurements for projective ones, but then they introduce the POVMs, they don't go back in this situation. So I've talked to many people, including me before, that what does it mean, joint measurability and compatibility for POVMs? Well, so the definition, I think it's quite fair. Even the ones that maybe are not familiar will agree with this definition. So one would say that two measurements, say A and B, they are described by this POVM elements, they can be jointly performed if there exists a third measurement such that you can recover the other POVMs as marginal. And the interpretation is quite simple, is that when you measure this third one, you learn both outputs at the same time somehow. And why do we want marginals? Well, you can just imagine like in a, here we are working the level of POVM, of operators, but when we get the probabilities, we just want a big probability distribution that takes care of everything at the same time. And this recovering as marginals, the consistency. So, okay, good. Now we are solid. We have a mathematical definition. What does it mean, joint measurability? And from now on, like in the end of the talk, I'll discuss a bit. There are other notions of compatibility that they are not equivalent for POVMs. We'll discuss a bit in the end. But for now on, when I say incompatibility, I mean jointly measurability. And everyone likes examples, so let's work with this Pauli measurements. These are the simplest case, right? The simplest quantum system, a two-level quantum system. And everyone knows this Pauli measurement sigma z and sigma x. And they are famous as well because they cannot be performed at the same time. One cannot do together like sigma x and sigma z. That's clear. But what happens when we have like noisy versions of Pauli measurements? For instance, it's a very natural noise. And so here, these are the POVMs of my noisy sigma z measurement. I'm saying that with some probability eta, it will go as the usual Pauli measurements. And with some probability 1 minus eta, I have uniform noise. For instance, eta equals 1, I recover the traditional Pauli measurements. And eta equals 0, I have a measurement that is identical to one side, identical on to the other side, uniformly random. Okay, of course, we can work with the same white noise with the sigma x, other Pauli measurement. And now we can ask, can we jointly perform these two measurements? We know the answer for the case eta equals 1, and it's clear. In the case eta is equals 0, of course we can. But is there a critical eta, eta in between 0 and 1, such that everything changes? And actually, the answer is yes. It's 1 over square root of 2. And it's, here I put like this amount of noise implies joint measurability, but it's actually a bit strong. It's an if and only if. It's a standard result. And something that I find really interesting as well, that of course we can play a little bit with the other Pauli measurement, the sigma y. And we have this funny phenomenon that eta is smaller or equal than 1 over square root of 2, implies pairwise measurability. But if you want to have tripwise measurability, all the three at the same time, we require an iter that is different, a bit smaller, right? So just one funny example for joint measurability, we can have this thing that some people name hollow triangle. Then this was one particular example with Pauli measurements, that's such that you have one measurement here that you can perform this two at the same time, this two at the same time, this two at the same time, but we cannot do all the three. And I don't know if it's easy to see, but this phenomenon can only happen with POVMs. For projective measurements, if this A commutes with B, B commutes with C, A commutes with C. So just for us to see that POVMs, they can be considerably more complex than projective measurements. So now we change a bit the topic. We'll discuss non-locality. What do I mean with non-locality? For now, I'll discuss like one kind of non-locality that gets the name. It's famous as EPI steering for Einstein Podolsky Rosen steering. Then it was the first like non-locality, kind of non-locality that appeared, one can say, in this famous paper of Einstein Podolsky Rosen. But it was like fully, I can say, maybe it's not fair, but in my opinion, it was only fully formalized quite recent in a paper by Wiseman and some other collaborators that we'll discuss later as well. So let's start with an example. Suppose that Alice and Bob, they share a quantum state, the singlet, the Maxwell entangled one. And then Alice performs sigma z in her state. We know that the correlations of the singlet, so if Alice gets the outcome zero, so she'll keep, after the match, she'll have the state cat zero, and Bob will have cat one. If she gets one, Bob will have cat zero. And this can happen with probably one half. So one can say, well, is this what quantum theorem about? Is about, is it this weird, like this phenomenon, Alice is like collapsing Bob's state? But actually, no, right? There's nothing, I can say, there's nothing non-classical, there's nothing weird in this situation. One way, for example, to explain a different, imagine that Alice and Bob actually, they never share the singlet. Bob doesn't know what he has, and Alice just send a state cat zero to Bob with probability one half, and or she sends cat one with probability one half, and Bob will have the same quantum system on his side. It's this for Bob is totally equivalent from that. So there's nothing to see there. Another way to get this correlation, a very classical perspective, you can imagine that you have an envelope, and then you mark one in one envelope, zero in the other, you mix uniformly, send one to Alice, one to Bob, you have the same kind of correlation. It's not so interesting. But nevertheless, the situation can change if Alice performs sometimes sigma z and sometimes sigma x. So when we are in the situation, again, it follows directly from the anti-correlation of the singlet that if Alice gets the zero answer for sigma z, Bob has one. If she gets one, Bob has zero. But on the other hand, if Alice performs sigma x, it's a bit different. When she gets minus, Bob will have the state cat plus. If she gets cat plus, Bob will have cat minus. And now things are a bit different. And this, we can actually see that this strategy that I said before, that sometimes Alice sends cat zero, sometimes Alice sends cat one, cannot simulate the situation. Alice cannot pretend, Bob cannot be fooled by Alice in the sense that he thinks that they share an entangled state, but actually Alice is just sent randomly single qubits. And this is what steering is about. In the next slide, I'll give the more mathematical definition. But one thing that we can see before even seeing the math, in order to get this result, I've used incompatible measurements and also an entangled state. Actually, they are both required for steering. And before passing the slide, there's one interpretation of steering that I like a lot. One can imagine that they share the state. Alice has his quantum system. He has a qubit. He's not sure if it's Alice sending qubits or if he shares a singlet with Alice, but he has a qubit on his side. And then he asks Alice, he communicates, for instance, hey, Alice, can you prepare me one eigenstate of sigma z? Or he asks a different question, Alice, can you prepare me an eigenstate of sigma x? And if they really share the singlet, Alice can always do that. She cannot know for sure if it's going to be cat 1 or cat 0. But she can prepare for Bob. With probability 1, she can prepare these eigenvectors for Bob. And this is what theory is about. So in order to get more formal, in order to understand everything, there are a few equivalent ways to define steering. One that I like a lot relies on this concept of assemblage that is defined by this equation here. So the assemblage is actually what Bob has when Alice performs these measurements here in my notation here. So this is a POM element. A represents the outcome, and X, one of the measurements that Alice has performed. So for example, Alice, in the particular case that I said before, X will be sigma X or sigma Z, and A would be the 0, 1, or plus or minus. And please notice that this assemblage actually contains all the information of the scenario that I presented before, in the sense that the assemblage captures the state that Bob has. It can be funny that it hits A and X, but that's what Bob has, right? What Bob has when Alice performs the measurement Z and gets the outcome A. So the assemblage gives you the state, and also this trace here is the probability of having the state. So actually you have all the information on this situation. And now that we know what assemblage means, there's a very convenient way to define steering. We'll say that one assemblage is unsteerable if it can be written in this form, where here, this is a quantum state in the situation that I presented before in this 2-qubit. This will actually be a single qubit state that Alice is sending to Bob. We accept convex combination mixtures given by a probability distribution here represented by pi on a variable that the technical term people like to say this local hidden variable, just to accept mixtures. And this is also probability distribution on A, that what Alice is going to do when she has the income X and lambda. So people like to name the technical term sometimes the response function. So how can Alice fool Bob, or how can Alice pretend to Bob that they have this entanglement or they have non-classicality, but not. So we say that assemblage that can be written in this form, they are unsteerable. And everything that cannot is steerable. So now, one easy statement that I said before, that only entangled states can lead to steerable assemblage. It's easy to see, actually, that if the state is not entangled, separable, Alice can easily find a strategy such that she can fool Bob, in the sense that Alice, the assemblage can always be written in this form here when the state shared by Alice and Bob is separable. So steering is also a way to certify entanglement. So if you violate a steering inequality, if the assemblage is steerable, Alice and Bob, they are sure we share entanglement. But moreover, it's a deeper form than entanglement certification if you compare to the notion of entanglement witness, for example, in the sense that of trustness, in the sense that Bob doesn't need to trust Alice. I'll go a bit back later in this notion of trustness. But now that we know what steering means, we can go back to this picture that I've shown you before. Before it was a bit more informal. Here I just had non-locality, and here I just had compatibility. And actually going back to this very famous paper of Werner, actually in his paper he's shown that some quantum states, they are entangled, but they can only lead to unsteerable correlations. In this framework that I presented, the state is useless. In a resource theory, one can say that it's totally equivalent to separable states, although it has the quantum taste. Here, I think it's nice to stop a little bit, just to discuss a bit of the history, something that I find quite interesting. That, well, as we know, the first paper that discussed this entanglement non-locality was this Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen 35. And then just after it came a paper by Schrödinger, maybe the first time that some physics paper present the word entanglement. And if I don't know if you ever read this paper. If you read this paper, you see that Schrödinger actually, he had the notion of steering his mind. And he writes the definition of entanglement for pure states only. And in my opinion, what he did, like he wrote the definition of steerable states. But when the states are pure, this definition, they coincide. And it's quite funny that I believe that the first definition of what does entanglement mean for separable, for mixed states, was given by Werner. So Werner somehow changed the definition, and he discussed about Bell non-locality that EPRC was not so trendy at the time. But actually what he did was something for steering. So just a historical fact that I find quite funny. So now we are ready like to talk about the result of this paper, that we want to do a connection here. So the question is, so we have some entangled states that are local, in the sense that some states are entangled, they are useless for EPR steering. Can we have measurements that are incompatible but useless, that they have the non-classical taste, and at the same time, they don't represent, they don't outperform any classical measurements, any compatible measurements? We were looking for an analog of Werner's state. So we were looking for a set of measurements that they don't help anything. And funny enough, we were looking for that. But actually, the result that we got is no joint measurability implies that a set of measurements useful for steering, always. So in this picture, that's our contribution. That meaning that every time that Alice performs measurements that they are not compatible, that they cannot be jointly performed, there exists a quantum state such that they have steering in the end. And moreover, the more precise result, that so Alice, let Alice performs a set of measurements that they are not compatible. And here, I suppose that Alice and Bob, they share a quantum state that's pure and entangled. The assemblage is steerable. Actually, it was even more that we were looking for, because in the beginning, we wanted just to sort of, there exists a single quantum state. There exists a quantum state such that they have steering, but actually, it holds for any pure entangled state. And here I'd like to reinforce that the result is general in the sense that for any number of measurements, any number of outputs, any dimension of quantum system, I would like as well to do a drawing here. So that's the scenario that we work. So I said that this Alice on her side, she's going to perform these measurements, that they are not compatible. They share a quantum state that is pure and entangled. This is the assemblage held by Bob. And I'll say that every time that this is not jointly measurable and this state is entangled, you can be sure that this assemblage is steerable. The proof is actually quite simple. Before, I had a sketch of the proof here, but I decided to let it to the end and to talk to more interesting things before. And the reason why we like this result, because it provides some interpretations on what do we mean by joint measurability and how does it connect with EPR steering, this form of non-locality. And one thing that I find interesting as well is to check the application. Because since we have this very strong connection, this if and only if connection, we can try to explore results from one community, the steering one, non-locality, and the other side as well. We can get like known results for joint measurability and apply the steering. I'll present one application of the result. So imagine the situation that now it's only like one part, single part. Alice, she has a qubit, and she wants to perform all projective measurements at the same time. She wants to perform all Pauli measurements and everything that she can, all the Bloch sphere, if you want, all the possible projective measurements. Of course, she cannot. But if there's some noise, some white noise, like the same noise that we discussed before, maybe she can. But again, it's clear that if the noise, if eta here is zero, she can perform everything at the same time if she accepts some noise. And now, can we say something about the critical eta? When does it change? We know that one, she cannot, and zero, she can. And actually, it's really easy to show using this theorem that it's precisely one half. Actually, we rely on this paper by Werner and this Werner's model to show that. And this question, it's funny because I was not aware when I was working on that, but it was asked before by Teiko, Heinosari, and some other collaborators that they were really inside this joint measurable thing. And they managed to show that one half is enough, but they stated as an open question, is it sufficient? And it seemed as a very hard question, but if we rely on the result of Werner, it becomes trivial, given like that we have this Werner paper. And this is how we get this one half. We just use Werner's model to show that one half is enough. And we use this paper here that was, in my opinion, the paper that formalized steering in the way that we use today. And combining these both papers, we get trivially this result. And another application as well, maybe this one is a bit more technical. We were able to find that states on this form, so this represents a pure entangled state parameterized by an angle theta. And this is the partial trace of this state here. We can show that states on this form, they are unsteerable. And moreover, they are tight in the sense that you cannot increase this 1/2 weight here. It was known that this state was steerable, but it was not known it was tight. And it follows against trivially from our result, a bit more technical. And another funny application here. It was actually first pointed out by Matt in a recent paper of him that if eta is smaller, eta this noise is smaller than 5/12, all POVMs can be measured at the same time. And actually, to this result, we can get in a very easy form by combining results in paper of Barrett. If you are familiar with non-locality, it's a paper where he presents quantum states that are local for all POVMs, but they are entangled, but local for all POVMs. Another paper that we had with the same people by then, and it was pointed out in this recent paper of Matt. Okay, and applications from the other side. So now imagine the situation that Alice and Bob, they share 2-qubit Werner state, and Alice is performing, she performed random measurements. She's going to choose 2 measurements, uniformly random in the Bloch sphere. One can imagine the Haar measure, uniformly random in the Bloch sphere. And what's the probability that the assemblage held by Bob is going to be steerable? It's a question that, in principle, it's not so connected with joint measurability, but actually, it's very easy to see by exploring this paper, actually, an old paper on joint measurability by Paul Bush. We can solve analytically in a very simple way. So this is the probability that the assemblage held by Bob is steerable, where eta here is the visibility of the Werner state, the 2-qubit Werner state, and so in this curve here. And one thing that is easy to see, but I find it quite beautiful in this way, that if Alice and Bob, they share a pure 2-qubit state, Alice can measure anything, basically. The only thing that she cannot is to measure the same measurement. And we have this nice curve here. And actually, we are now currently with a project just trying to get applications from the joint measurability side on steering with random measurements. Now let's change a bit the topic. I've mentioned Bell non-locality. That is, in some sense, a stronger form than non-locality, stronger than EPR steering. And the difference between Bell non-locality and this EPI steering that I discussed before is that now, before Alice had her inputs and her outputs, but Bob, he had the quantum system. One interpretation that before Bob has, like, he trusts his measurements and he can actually do quantum tomography. And in Bell non-locality, Bob doesn't trust his systems, and actually we're going to work only with the statistical data, AB given XY, where this outcome of Alice, outcome of Bob, income of Alice, income of Bob. So I'll not go so much in detail, but if you've seen this Bell non-locality before, probably you've seen this CHSH inequality, So these are the Bell inequalities that they actually show that they actually show that a set of probability distribution is non-local. And for you asking what does that mean, this some people they like to name this object, this mathematical object as correlator. And they are just the difference between these two probabilities. The probability that A, the output of Alice, is the same as output of Bob, minus the outcome of Alice is different than the outcome of Bob. Without going to further details in Bell non-locality, this question, of course, arises naturally. We have shown that for steering, incompatibility of measurements, they imply Bell non-locality for steering. And what do we have for Bell non-locality? What can we say? And actually, there were some results before. This is actually very old, from Cyrielson and Kalfin. In 85, they had shown that for projective measurements, we have this strong connection. It's not so hard to see. And for the case of POVMs, there was a very big improvement as well in a fairly recent paper, that when we are working with two dichotomic measurements, no joint measurability are always useful for Bell non-locality. Maybe I think it's useful to do another drawing here. I'll go to this side. So here, what do we have now? What do I mean with being useful? So we have Alice and Bob. They share a quantum state. And now I'll say for a fixed set of measurements of Alice. Alice measurements, they are fixed. When do I say that these measurements, they are useless for Bell non-locality? They are useless if for this set of measurements, for all quantum states that they can share, and for all possible measurements that Bob can perform, we always have locality. This is always useless. So I say that it's useless to Bell non-locality when this fixed set of measurements, it doesn't matter what Bob does, it doesn't matter the state, it's useless. And it's in the sense that that Michael Wolff and his collaborators, it's in the sense that they showed it's useful. So every time that's not jointly measurable, if it's two outcome measurements, we have this strong connection. But in general, there may exist some incompatible Bell local measurements. That was actually our goal in the beginning of this project. We wanted to find these measurements that they have the quantum taste, they have the non-classical phenomenon, but nevertheless, they're useless in some framework. So, and we believe that they exist. And I'll present you some evidences of that. So one evidence that if Alice and Bob, they share the maximal entangled state, there exists a set of measurements that they are incompatible but Bell local. So in this situation here, if instead of saying that all quantum states, I said that Alice and Bob, they share states that are maximally entangled, then actually there exists. We are sure that there are some measurements that they are not compatible, but useless anyway. So in my opinion, that's one evidence. Because one would say that maximally entangled states are the best one. We don't know if they are the best for this situation, but it's one evidence in this direction. Another evidence is that, remember this hollow triangle measurement that I said before? I gave you the example of the Pauli measurements. But actually, any set of measurements that they have this property here, if there are two outputs, so that you have one M1, M2, and M3, that they can be pairwise performed, but they cannot be triplewise performed. They're useless for non-locality if we restrict to full correlators. So if we analyze only the data given by this correlation here. I'll just reinforce that this is not the full generality. This is a particular case, we are only partially using the data. But if we are working this case here, we make sure that all hollow triangle measurements are useless for non-locality. So here, I just want to actually all Bell inequalities can be written in this form. All Bell inequalities when we are dealing with two output measurements. In the scenario, Alice and Bob, they only have two outputs. We can always write as this Bell polynomial that some people name, where we have the correlator and this single correlator term that some people name. And again, we have one evidence that for this Pauli hollow triangle measurement that I've shown before, we can actually get this formula here that implies no Bell violation, where the eta here is the visibility, the noise on the measurement, and this is the maximal qubit violation of the particular Bell inequality. Actually, by exploring some inequalities, Grothendieck inequalities, I don't know if you're familiar, we can actually show that there's a large class of inequalities that they satisfy this property here. And another very strong evidence, in my opinion, is that we can get known Bell inequalities and see and check if a set of measurements is useful or useless. And actually, we can phrase this problem as an SDP. And so, well, in this table here, we see these are the noisy Pauli measures that I've discussed before. Here is the amount of noise required for pairwise measurability, for triplewise measurability. And then we see here that in order to violate the known Bell inequalities with three outputs, four outputs, and five outputs on Bob's side, these are the requirements on eta. And they are very far away from this point here. What gives us the impression then? There are this set of measurements here, the hollow triangle Pauli measurements, they are actually useless for non-locality, although they are incompatible for some range of noise. This is another class of measurements. It's a different kind of noise. They also gave us some evidence, but I'll not go so much in details. I'll come back if there are some questions. And given this evidence, there are actually a few small ones that I didn't present and some intuition that we have. We believe that there exists a set of non-jointly measurable measurements that they can never lead. So we believe that there are some measurements, set of measures, that they have the property, the funny property, like the Venice state. They have the non-classical taste, nevertheless, useless for Bell non-locality. So what can I say in the end? Well, I believe that this work, like this thing that we found, helps us to understand the connection between non-locality and measurements, especially for the case of steering, where the connection is really strong. And we have improved the level, like the conceptual level, and also in the level of applications. Sometimes it's really easy now to translate the results from two fields that they were not so much connected before. And for open questions, so one thing that we're trying to explore, how far can we go with this firm in the level of applications? Like, what else can we do? We showed a few ones. I feel then one can say that they are quite artificial, but can we get non-trivial results, non-trivial and interesting results by exploring this connection? And of course, the big open question, at least for us, is that we got this very strong relation for EPI steering. And what can we say about Bell non-locality? Can we prove this conjecture we have? And even more, if our conjecture is correct, if we manage to prove, is there a simple concept that captures Bell non-locality for quantum measurements? As I said in the beginning, there are different notions of incompatibility of measurements for POVMs. Maybe we're looking for joint measurability, but there, that's not the concept. There are some different concepts like coexistence, non-disturbance. So maybe there's a different concept that captures everything for Bell non-locality, if our conjecture is correct. And I should also mention that at the same time that just after that we finished our paper, these people, they work from Ziegen University, they actually had the same result of us in an independent form. And it was quite funny to read the paper because we had more or less the same mentality, and they also finished their paper by conjecture, the same thing that we did. And that's it.
In the triangle scenario, and where you have this sort of pairwise measurements, but it's hollow, so the notion of a Bell inequality for that scenario, presumably, would tell you that if your parties are making measurements such that they commute. Pairwise, then the existence of a classical model implies that a certain inequality will hold, right?
I'm not sure if I understood when you say commutation only on one side, or you're saying a commutation Alice side and Bob side. Can you?
Associate measurements with each of the vertices. And the measurements between any two vertices commute. Or are, I shouldn't say commute, but are compatible. Then the notion of a Bell inequality is the notion that there's an underlying probabilistic model which either respects or doesn't respect a Bell inequality. And so if we say that there's a space-like separated party in each of these places, then a Bell inequality will tell us something about the possibility that the measurement results come from a classical underlying distribution. There's no way to distinguish, in terms of a Bell inequality, whether the probability distribution which we're talking about is one which comes from all three parties sharing a common probability distribution, or whether there are sort of a hidden variable for these two parties and a different hidden variable which gives these rise to these correlations and a third. So the common ancestor versus pairwise ancestor. I'm wondering if you can say anything about that distinction in terms of quantum states and measurements.
One thing, I'm not sure if it was clear, but when there is this hollow triangle, so for instance, the situation is like that. So Alice, she has the three measurements on her side that they have this property here. That they can be performed in pairs at the same time, but not all the three. And you mentioned the tripartite, in a tripartite case. So this is something that we didn't discuss in the paper and I didn't present in the talk, but we actually wonder if maybe the resource is useless in a bipartite, but useful in the tripartite. I'm not really sure if I understood the question. To connect that with the state, can you?
I don't really have this very well formed. I'm wondering if you had any comments on the notion of a quantum state, which would be sort of entangled pairwise but not triplewise.
To try to think about that in the level of quantum states, right? Actually, this phenomenon exists. Right? There are quantum states that you said this is the genuine entangled states, right? That they are separable in all by partitions, but if you see the whole thing, they are entangled. So this phenomenon exists. And actually, there's something like fairly recent that is funny as well, that you can have tripartite states that they are separable in all by partition, but they are non-local. They are not only entangled, but they are moreover useful for Bell inequalities. It's even stronger than entangled. So this is, some people work on that, and this is a known fact, the existence of such states. Yes. Yes. Yes, yes, of course. So the notion of non-disturbance actually is what captured this Heisenberg thing, for example. And actually, to discuss like formally what non-disturbance means, we need to say a bit more than the POVM. When we only have, so imagine that this set of matrices, this set of operators here, they represent a POVM, they represent a quantum measurement. This is not enough to describe what we have after the measurement. And so for example, if Alice, or if a single part performed this measurement, what's the post-measure quantum state? So there is this notion of instrument. I don't know how familiar you are. But for example, sometimes people will say that they state, if Alice has a state rho and she performs this measurement, and she gets the output A, the final state, the conditioning to this output A, the final state will be something like that. By here, the trace that normalizes this thing. So in order to talk about disturbance, we need to talk about this instrument, how the state evolved after the measurement. And then the formal definition of non-disturbance will say that the measurement A does not disturb B if you can find instruments to implement measured A, such that when you measure A, and then after you measure B, this is equivalent as measuring B directly. And for the case of projective measurements, this concept, it coincides with joint measurability, and it coincides with commutation. When for POVMs, we can talk about commutation of all POVM elements, and this is strictly stronger than the notion of joint measurability. And actually, so we have like a hierarchy that commutation implies non-disturbance that implies joint measurability. And this other notion that, and for projective measurements, they collapse, they become the same. And this other notion is coexistence. Actually, it was an open question like that was solved quite recently, if coexistence was the same thing as joint measurability. And actually, it was shown that it's not. Actually, coexistence is here in this hierarchy here. And the definition is, you have like two measurements, two set of POVMs, A and B, and you say that they coexist if you can find a third one such that the range of all POVM elements is contained in the range of this third one. It's a bit more technical than the other somehow, but before, many people, they thought this was totally equivalent, this mathematical definition, this range thing, it's totally equivalent to joint measurability. And actually, it's funny because when I present this, I said, this question for joint measurability was asked before by Teiko, Hinosaadi, and some other people from this community. Actually, the question was for coexistence. But in this case, in this particular case of Pauli measurements there, they coincide.
Thank you.